on Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA. It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. Dr. Z is Dr. George Lupko, founder and director of the foundation. Now, here's WRTA's Doug Herentine and Dr. George Lupko.
We've talked about a number of different things over the course of this program, and you can find all of them archived at WRTA.com under The Buzz with Dr. Z. But this one is a little bit different, because some of the stuff you would say, well, that's a bit niche, or that's about, it doesn't appeal to everybody. And thankfully, in a lot of cases, these problems that we've talked about have not been everybody's. But today we have a topic that I didn't even know how to begin to research, because it's so wide-ranging, and it's something that all of us have to deal with, or we should be dealing with it, and that's the topic of sleep. Dr. Lupko, welcome.
Well, thanks, Doug. Always a pleasure to be here. It's a very nice day out, a lot of bright sunshine. We're going to talk about sleep today, and not the usual way in which I've formulated this in the past, where we talked about sleep apnea or some of these other products, mm-hmm. problems. But what I want to talk about just is sleep in general. What is it? What makes us sleep? What kind of problems we get if we don't have enough sleep? And what are the best ways to get sleep? You know, so those are kind of the issues. And it's something that we all should be interested in because, well, we all sleep.
Well, we hope we all do.
Well, we do.
Because, I mean, there's a number of us that would wish that we had more sleep, and others are, I don't think too many people say, well, I'm getting too much.
No, well, we'll talk about some of that as we go along, but I guess, and this is maybe not the best way to start the program, but I have to tell you that overall, sleep is really not understood, not well understood. It remains one of the real conundrums for people who are so-called neurobiologists, these people who study the brain and the biology of the brain. We're not really sure why it developed, why we have it, but we do know that we need it. And so that's kind of what we're talking about today. So some of the things I'm going to tell you are, to a certain degree, scientific speculation, but we ought to talk about it anyway.
Well, I would imagine that there's been more study done on sleep than a lot of other things because, number one, everybody is affected. Number two, I'm sure it's easier to study that than certain diseases that we've discussed.
Yeah, this isn't really a disease. This is a basic bodily function
right.
that we all have, and apparently it's important, but we don't totally understand why. So let's talk about some of the things that we think is why we sleep, okay? Why we think we sleep. First of all, It's a type of energy conservation and what we call metabolic restoration. And it by that, it means that it's preserving some calories, okay, and it's replenishing some of the energy stores that the brain has. That's what's happening when you sleep. At least that's one of the things that we think is going on. One of the other things that scientists who study this believe is that sleep causes a clearance of metabolic waste. And I don't think you, I guess you didn't feel that, you know, your thinking creates waste, wasteful thinking, but but in any event, it does. And we feel that sleep promotes the removal of what we call neurotoxic products, chemicals in your brain that accumulate while you're awake. I don't know that you realize that, but apparently there are chemicals that are accumulating in your brain during the wake cycle and need to be taken out. You got to take out the trash. And sleep appears to be one of the things that does that.
So if you watched a particularly bad TV movie, you can go to sleep and it clears it from your mind.
I guess it does. I don't know. Although I'll tell you, I've been watching a thing called Ransom Canyon on Netflix. I give them a plug here. And it really disturbs, it does disturb my sleep.
But is not it's that good or it's that bad?
Well, not so much that I don't fall asleep while I'm watching it. That's that.
But that's a true test.
Yeah, that's a true test. It does wake me up, though. All right. And then one of the other things that we feel sleep does, it's needed for cell repair and restoration. So I know that we generally think of the brain as not being able to regenerate itself. And that's at least true at the present time. But some of the cells can be damaged during wakefulness, apparently, and sleep tends to help repair these cells and restore them. So you're actually hurting your brain by staying awake, I guess, is the thing. You're getting neurotoxins and such. And that's one category, this so-called restoration and housekeeping functions, those three things. But then there's some other higher order things that we think sleep does, and that has to do with memory and learning. It helps to consolidate our memory and our learning. And what does that mean? Well, I'm not sure I know, because I've read this over several times, but apparently we feel that sleep has a way of helping us consolidate whatever we've learned that day or been learning and cements it into our brain and allows us to remember it in the future.
So this is afterwards, the retention of what you learned, opposed to if you do not have enough sleep, you're not going to be paying attention in class or at work or whatever.
Yeah. You're not – whatever you think you've learned, you're not going to learn if you don't get enough sleep, I guess is the point.
Hmm.
And additionally, there's nerves interact with each other. There's connections. They call them synapses. That's the technical term, but it's where nerves connect. Well, one of the leading thoughts is that sleep helps to restore the strength of these connections. When we think and when we do things, electrical impulses and such are conducted through these connections between the nerves, the neurons. Well, apparently, during the wake cycle, these signals become weakened during the day, and sleep tends to restore them so that, and I suppose, most people, when they wake up, they feel better, I guess. They're wide awake.
Well, once you get awake.
You know, and this may very well be the symptom of improving the strength of those neurons, those connections. And last but not least, probably it has to do with some control of your emotions and processing your emotions. And people who don't get enough sleep oftentimes are depressed or they have some other issues. And so sleep tends to restore that and makes that better. But beyond those things, sleep also tends to support a whole lot of other functions. Functions like your cardiovascular system and regulates some of your metabolic activity and your immune activity and even some of your hormonal activity, endocrine activity. It can be associated with improvements in certain glandular functions that we have. It also has a function in temperature regulation. I'll talk about that when we talk about the physiology of sleep, what makes us sleep and how we sleep. And also, in young people, the development of their brain itself, sleep is necessary for that neural development of the brain itself.
So when the parents say to the kid, you're 4 years old, go to bed, you need your sleep, they're not just making it up despite the fact what you thought when you were four.
Yeah. And the reason why chronic sleep deprivation or insufficiency or disrupted sleep is a problem, it's associated with obesity, it's associated with diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure, that is, stroke, coronary artery disease, Alzheimer's disease, and as I said, mood disorders, depression and such. So sleep, when we ask the question, why do we sleep? Well, there's a lot of answers. There's a lot of answers or a lot of supposition. Do we know exactly how this evolved? Actually, no, we don't. We don't know why we sleep, but we think that it has the functions that we mentioned. And, that's why we need it, I guess.
Well, very few living beings don't sleep. I mean, I think there's some fish on the bottom of the ocean that they say, well, they never sleep, but they sort of go into a fugue state or something.
I thought sharks never sleep. They always keep moving or something like that.
Yeah. So there has to be a reason.
Well, we're kind of pretty far along on the evolutionary spectrum from the sharks, but the question of why we sleep has to do, it appears, with some type of improvement in brain function that occurs during that sleep period that we require or that is necessary for us to function as we do.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko. I'm Doug Herendeen from WRTA, and the subject is one that we can all relate to specifically, sleep, because it has many things to do with how all of us are doing, no matter what other afflictions we may have or lack of them, based on how our health is. But everybody has to sleep.
You said that right, Doug. Now, we were just talking about why we sleep, and we said we don't totally understand why, but there are some mechanisms that go on that we think are the reason. But what causes us to sleep? Why do we? How do we fall asleep?
You get tired.
Well, I know, but what are the, I guess, the scientific basis for that? What's the measurements that we have that tell us why we sleep?
Well, you know, people have many euphemisms. My battery ran down, or, you know, especially if they have like a kid or a puppy or a kitten, they nod off and go, oh, the battery ran down. So now they got to recharge. It's pretty much what we're doing.
Well, here's what I want to tell you. This is all now located in the brain itself, but in a section of the brain, doesn't matter what the name is, but a section of the brain, there's like a switch, a metabolic switch that is either turned on or turned off. And it's governed by some chemicals, and it's governed by the environment. There is a mechanism where, well, let's call it sleep pressure. The pressure to sleep begins to accumulate over time while you're awake. And of course, that pressure goes away when you sleep. And so what's causing that pressure? Well, there are chemical influences in the brain. While you're awake, you're producing certain chemicals. And we talked about, you know, why we sleep, because we're removing some of that metabolic waste, okay? Well, it's not really waste. It's other chemicals. And one of them, the technical name is adenosine, but during the wake cycle, while we're awake, your brain is producing this chemical.
Adenosine. Okay.
Adenosine. And that adenosine is beginning, now just listen how this works. The adenosine is actually promoting activity of the brain cells that cause you to sleep. In other words, the adenosine is rising, and it's stimulating cells that want to make you sleep.
So it builds up throughout the day, and when you get a certain buildup, you're not off.
Well, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. There are some other complicating factors. For example, we have the other thing on this switch, okay? We have the one mechanism of this chemical rising as we sleep, or as we stay awake, making us want to sleep. And then on the other side of this is the natural rhythms that our body has. These are called circadian rhythms. Natural rhythm our body.
I wondered when that would come up.
The natural rhythm our body has to light and dark. To light, sunlight, mm-hmm. okay? And no light, darkness, you know. And this is a function of what we see through our eyes. And the stimulation of light through our eyes causes something to happen in a gland that's at the very base of our brain called the pineal gland. The function of that gland is to produce something that we see on television, see on the shelf, called melatonin.
Uh-huh.
You've heard about melatonin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So melatonin is then released by the pineal gland in response to light stimulus. And, of course, this rising level of adenosine. Those two things, okay, make sleep almost irresistible, okay, when you get into that circumstance. And as melatonin rises, okay, we're sleeping more. It peaks probably about Well, normal people, you know, normal sleep cycle about 4 o'clock in the morning or so. Okay. Hmm. Begins to rise in the evening. Okay. As light stimulus goes down, the pineal gland begins to produce this melatonin. Okay. Keeping us sleepy. As we wake up, when we're seeing light, and that doesn't have to necessarily, and we'll talk about this when we talk about how we stay asleep and how to maintain your sleep. The light doesn't necessarily just have to be from the sun. It can be from a light bulb. You wake up in the middle of the night and you turn the lights on, you know, you're going to shut off your melatonin and it's going to be hard to go back to sleep. And I think a lot of us probably have experienced that in our time.
Which is why you don't turn the lights on when you're trying to get to the bathroom. You may have night lights on so you don't stub your toe. But aside from that, you don't want it to be bright and waking you up.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and we'll talk about, again, we'll talk about that kind of toward the end of the session here today about the factors that help to promote good and restful sleep. So then the causes for us to go to sleep, why we go to sleep, are really two things, okay? One, a stimulus that in the brain causes chemicals to rise, okay, that promote, that make us want to sleep, okay? They affect these neurons, and so there, it's a back and forth. We want to stay awake, but the more we stay awake, the more our brain says you got to go to sleep.
Can you subvert that with coffee or, you know, other caffeinated beverages? Or unfortunately, people take these little bottles of stuff you can get at the convenience store, and I don't figure that's a very good idea.
Yeah, there's going to be things that you can do if you want to kind of bypass this whole mechanism, but you can't do it totally. You can take as much nicotine or caffeine as you want. Eventually, you're going to have to sleep. Experimentally, for example, certain mice species, if they don't sleep, they die. I mean, and if you...
That's pretty extreme.
Yeah, it's pretty extreme. But if you could... I don't know if you've ever had a period where you've had to stay awake, you know? When we're teenagers, we stayed awake, and we stayed awake for a long time, but...
And somehow survive that.
Survive that.
And many other stupid things that teenagers do.
But you know, when we're trying to get information from people, you know, and we torture them and things like that. I don't know if you've ever tortured anybody, Doug, but...
It depends what they think of the program.
I know. I understand. But one of the things they use is sleep deprivation.
Mm.
You know, they have somebody in a room. They keep the lights on 24 hours a day. They keep loud music playing. And they do whatever they can to prevent the patient or the subject from sleeping. Okay? So it has significant detrimental effects if we don't sleep. Okay? And you can subvert these natural mechanisms by just doing the opposite of what they're supposed to do. If you give too much light stimulation, you're not going to have that sleep mode going on. If you have too much sound, you're not going to do that. You get too much brain stimulation, et cetera. So how we sleep, what causes us to sleep is this yin and yang, this balance in our brain between the factors that are occurring while we're awake that tend to stimulate factors to make us go to sleep. And once those two things are in balance, we have a nice day-night cycle. We sleep through those items and we're in good shape. Okay. So as far as the physiology of how we got to sleep and what makes us sleep is important to understand. There are stages of sleep. I think most people know that. If you don't know it scientifically, you know it yourself, right?
Yeah.
You can be in a light sleep. Light sleep is, you know, you're laying there, you're sitting there, got your eyes closed, and I go, "Hey, Doug," and you'll wake up.
Yeah. Whether you want to or not.
Yeah, whether you want to or not.
Or the you get a text on the phone, you forgot to turn the dinger off, and it's like, "Oh crap, now what?"
Sure. So this is one of the stages of sleep, so-called light sleep. Then from there, our sleep progresses to a more deeper range of sleeping. the way in which we describe that, those deeper ranges of sleeping, has to do with the observation that our eyes move during certain levels of sleep.
REM.
Rapid eye movement, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the deep sleep, the deep levels of sleep, have two stages. One is so-called rapid eye movement sleep. If you see the patient who's asleep and so-called REM sleep, and we know that because we put electrodes on their head and we get an EEG and we know that they're in that sleep pattern. This is when you dream. This is when you dream. And it constitutes maybe 20-25% of your sleep cycle, okay?
And you also can't remember most of it when you wake up.
Well,
there's
some good reasons for that. Probably has to do with some of this stuff we just talked about where you're trying to consolidate your learning and memory and whatnot. After that, the next level, the deepest level, is a sleep where you don't move your eyes. You don't move your eyes at all. And that makes up pretty much most of the other rest of the sleep pattern that we the sleep stage that we have. During that time, nothing's happening. You're not dreaming. You're just out. You're just unconscious. One of the interesting things to know about is during REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, okay, like the second level of sleep, you know, mild sleep, REM sleep, then terrible sleep. During REM sleep, your body is basically paralyzed. Your muscles, the neurologic pattern there, paralyzes the muscles that you have, the skeletal muscles.
Mm.
Why do you think that is?
So you don't injure yourself?
Exactly, because you're dreaming. And you would act out your dream if it wasn't for the fact that the brain basically anesthetizes you, okay, during that period.
Well, the thing I have to ask about, if you've ever seen a dog or a cat asleep, and sometimes it'll be like they're running while they're asleep, and they're completely out. They're not, but whatever it is that, I don't know whether it's REM sleep that they're in, but they're dreaming of something where they're running or moving, and their legs are moving as if they were running away from something or to something.
Well, you'd be like that if your brain didn't put your muscles, anesthetize your body, and control the motor activity that you have.
It's Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA. I'm Doug Herendeen. Dr. George Lupko is with us. It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, and we're talking about sleep. We'll get back to that in just a bit, but we wanted to talk about the Black Lung Clinic and what that is.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. The Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania has a grant from the Department of Labor, and it's designed to help those folks out there who are current or former coal miners. And we have a program where you can get an evaluation that includes a chest x-ray and some breathing tests and an EKG and a check of your oxygen level and all for free, okay, through this grant. And then you visit with myself or one of the other doctors in the clinic to go over the results of those things. And if you demonstrate enough evidence there through this co-worker statute that you may have black lung disease, which is this deposition of coal dust in the lung that is affecting your lung function, then we can refer you on to some attorneys who are associated with the program as well. So in order to qualify for this program, you just have to be a coal miner or have coal mine exposure. Doesn't matter whether you did it for 20 years or 5 years or 30 years. And then you have to call our phone number and make an appointment. And the phone number is area code 814-800-2309. And I know it's Doug, you're going to tell them that it's going to be listed somewhere here on the radio station.
Yeah, when you listen to the podcast of this program later, you'll see a page, and right above that are some links, like the Facebook page, the links to the websites, and that phone number as well.
Okay. So, again, if you are a current coal miner, were a coal miner, regardless of how long you were working in the mines or even above ground in the strippings, you're entitled to have this evaluation. And if you call the phone number, 814-800-2309, we'll set up an appointment. You'll come in and have the studies done free of charge. If you're from a distance, and we do have some folks from sometimes a considerable distance, actually, we do have some money to fund a gas, you know, your gas in your car. Now it's over $4 a gallon, so that's a good little perk. And so we look forward to seeing you. Feel free to do that. I think it's an important little thing that we have at the Lung Disease Foundation, again, sponsored by the U.S. Department of Labor.
All right, 814-800-2309
yeah.
is a number to call. And again, you can look at the website and get some more information. The links will be on the podcast page for this show on WRTA.com later today. And Dr. Zlupko was talking about sleep.
Yeah, we've been talking about sleep here today. I hope you're staying awake while we're doing it, by the way.
It helps.
We talked about why we sleep. We don't really know exactly why we sleep. We have some thoughts and ideas about it. We talked about what makes us sleep, how we get to sleep.
What is that substance that builds up in us throughout the day?
In the brain, you build up something called adenosine, A-D-E-N-O-S-I-N-E.
Is that the opposite of adrenaline?
No.
Or not related?
No, it's not related at all. They both start with A, but that's about as far as it goes.
Because I was thinking, if you wake up and the smoke detector is going off and you smell smoke and you've got kids down the hall, you're suddenly very awake.
Well, you are awake, yes. Well, that's a totally different story. But what you're asking was, what we talked about earlier was the substance in the brain that builds up during your wake time, and it tends to stimulate those cells that want to make you sleep. And then we talked about melatonin and such.
And you get to a certain amount.
And you're ready to go.
You're
going to
sleep whether you expect to or not.
But what are the most common reasons that we don't have sleep, or that what are the most common sleep disorders, I guess is the way to put it. Now, we've talked in the past about obstructive sleep apnea, and we'll mention that here, but what do you think the most common sleep disorder is far and away?
Doom scrolling on your phone.
No. Well, it's a simple thing. It's called insomnia.
Oh, okay.
Insomnia. It's the most common sleep disorder that we have.
We've all probably experienced it. I certainly have.
Well, we're going to talk about what the definition of it is. I hope you haven't all experienced it. Insomnia is an inability to actually get to sleep or stay asleep. But so insomnia, then second actually is obstructive sleep apnea, which we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. Then there's something called restless leg syndrome. And I'm going to explain that a little bit in a minute. Again, something called narcolepsy. A lot of people may have seen these dogs
just,
that have.
Yeah, but human beings can have this too. It's just like you're sitting there having a conversation, boom, you're out.
Well, that's one type of narcolepsy. That narcolepsy has a couple different flavors to it. But the most serious one, yes, is where you clap your hands and the guy just falls asleep or the dog falls asleep. That's one type of narcolepsy, but there are other varieties. There are also some other behavior disorders, which we'll talk about, and some rhythm disorders. Remember, I talked about these, the rhythm that we have to sleep, the day-wake cycle, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just plow right through here. If we want to maybe group these things, these problems, we can do it by saying there are problems with falling asleep, and there's disturbances during sleep, and there's problems with too much sleep. You're excessively sleepy during the day.
Mm.
So those would be like general statement categories of these diseases or these abnormalities. If we want to touch on the most common one, namely insomnia, which is the most common sleep disorder. Roughly one-third of adults report insomnia symptoms. You know, you were just saying, you know, you can't fall asleep, you're having trouble falling asleep.
Mm-hmm. But and you want to, and you're trying to actively.
That's correct. But only about 6 to 10% of those actually meet the scientific criteria for sleep, which is defined by a difficulty starting sleep or initiating sleep or maintaining sleep. And something like this occurs usually more than 3 nights a week for more than 3 months. So that there's a scientific definition of insomnia. It's not just, I can't seem to sleep tonight, I must have insomnia. You don't want insomnia. You it's okay not to be able to sleep on any given night, but you certainly don't want to be diagnosed with insomnia. The next most common one we've talked about before on the show is obstructive sleep apnea. And this is an extremely common and frequently underdiagnosed problem where patients will have problems with the back of their throat that really collapses during sleep, and their oxygen level drops, and it creates a wakefulness for them. And the symptoms or the disease or the abnormality occurs at night, but the symptoms occur during the day with excessive sleepiness and falling asleep, et cetera. Here's one that I kind of like when they talk about it, is something called restless leg syndrome. And it's the urge to move the legs that worsens at rest and in the evening and improves with movement. In other words, if you get up and walk around,
yeah,
it kind of takes it away. Although when you're walking around, you're moving your legs. I don't understand that exactly. But people who have this, they lay in bed and their legs are just swishing around.
While they're asleep?
While they're asleep and getting to sleep, yeah.
So that would make me not want to fall asleep if my legs are moving involuntarily like that. that would just compound it.
Well, I understand that, but that's one of the things that can happen if you have this particular sleep disorder. The other thing you just mentioned is narcolepsy, and this is something that causes excessive daytime sleepiness, and there are several varieties of it. The one you talked about where you clap your hands and the person falls. That variety of narcolepsy is called cataplexy. It's not important that you remember all these names, but it's one of the several types of, there's about three types of narcolepsy itself, of which cataplexy is one where you get, with a stimulus, you clap your hands or something like that, there's a noise, and the person just collapses totally asleep. Wakes up, you know, if he hasn't hit his head or something like that, but that's what happens. And the treatment there is we have to give some patients some stimulants to keep them from falling asleep. But narcolepsy has several components. It's not just that falling asleep type deal. We have problems with, I'll call them sleep behavior disorders. And this is when we lose that normal. Remember I told you that when you're in rapid eye movement sleep, your body is, I'll just say paralyzed. The technical term is it's atonic.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a problem with the loss of REM sleep, that level of sleep apparently is really necessary for you to get the rest that you need, so to speak. Without that, you don't get that. And that's a real problem. And I can't go into it any further here. That's not. But some people have that, and it's really tough to figure out how to help them. It's usually treated, actually, with melatonin, okay, which tends to help them sleep a little better. And then there are these other type of disorders, which the technical term is parasomnias, and they're the things that we often laugh about. It's, you know, sleepwalking and having nightmares. I mean, serious nightmares, not just a scary dream. And sometimes what's called sleep paralysis, where the patient actually becomes almost paralyzed during the sleep period. So those are some of the things that we can identify as sleep disorders. And most of them have some treatments. Not all of them do. But it's interesting. Some are more interesting than others.
The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko, sponsored by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania on WRTA. I'm Doug Herendeen. We're talking sleep or lack thereof.
Yeah, we talked about really several issues here so far. We talked about why we sleep, which in the bottom line is we don't totally know for sure, but we have some ideas. What causes us to sleep? And this has to do scientifically with chemicals in the brain and various mechanisms that provide that stimulus for sleep. Number three was we talked about some of the disorders of sleep, and some of those pertain to these stages of sleep, different stages where, you know, so you can have a disorder that's you can't get to sleep, you can't stay asleep, you know, you are too sleepy. So those are the general categories that we're dealing with. And I thought just at the end here, I'd like to talk about what are the things that help to promote a good restful sleep? What are the things that we know that will help you do that? Mm-hmm. And again, if you have one of these sleep disorders, that's a different story. You need more professional help. These are things that you can do yourself. And the first thing on the list is you have to have a consistent sleep schedule. What does that mean? Well, it means you go to bed at the same time more or less every night, and you wake up more or less the same time every night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Some people don't necessarily have the option of doing that if their jobs are all over the place, all over the clock.
Well, no, but then those are people who may end up with certain types of sleep disorders or sleep problems, you see. So having a consistent sleep schedule is really important. The other thing has to do with the environment in which you're sleeping, okay? You want a nice, dark, quiet place. You want a cool bedroom, and I'll talk a minute about what kind of temperature is best for sleep. When we talk about quiet, okay, what's quiet? Well, usually it's somewhere around what we call 40 decibels, that decibel being a measure of noise, about loudness.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to put that in context, 30 decibels is a very quiet, no sound type of situation. 40 decibels is about what you'd get in a library, where there may be just a little bit of background noise, but mostly it's quiet. And then 60 decibels would be normal conversation like we're doing right now. So you want it somewhere in that quiet range, 40 decibels. You don't necessarily have to measure it, but that's really what you're after.
Admittedly, I'm biased here, but I know the number of people that sleep with the radio on are legion, and there are other people that can't stand any sound whatsoever. Even if the crickets are outside, they're not going to want to hear that, or they're going to have trouble getting to sleep. But others like to hear something like that, even if it's a music station or it's a talk station like RTA. They'll leave it on, but at a very low level. You don't want it at full blast.
Well, I hear you, and everybody has their own peculiarities, you know. But if we're talking about in general terms,
Okay,
you want a dark room, okay? You want it to be quiet. And you want it to be relatively cool, and I'll talk about that. Here's something that I'm an offender of, and that is to have in your sleep environment, you should avoid bright clocks and avoid clock watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Doug, but I live by the clock.
Yes.
Okay, I have schedules. I have to be somewhere at certain times. I know I have to be up at a certain time to be able to get to someplace at a certain time, you know. And so in my bedroom, I have a clock with these illuminated dials, you know.
Sure.
And I can tell you that I'm an offender of this. I wake up tossing and turning a little bit, and I look at the clock.
Absolutely.
And after the first time I do that, it's really much harder to get back to sleep. And where that segues into is, you know, we talked about the light stimulus with the pineal gland and melatonin and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what it is. But I don't know. It's just a habit of mine. I probably should put the covers over the little light-emitting diodes in the clock. But I don't, because I don't use an alarm.
The one. I've got a clock that has two alarms on it.
Yeah.
That comes back from my days when I was doing morning drive radio. There was no way I was going to do that without having two separate alarms on it. Plus, now I've got the phone.
Well, I don't use an alarm. I wake up naturally at almost the same time every morning.
Well, you've got your circadian rhythm set in stone then compared to some of us.
Yeah, but nonetheless, I'm always worried that it won't work. And so when I wake up in the middle of the night, I look at the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I can tell you, it does interfere with your sleep. The other thing you want to do, and kind of along the same lines, is if you're about ready to go to sleep, you want to kind of avoid bright lights and maybe sitting close to the television or something like that. Because remember, this circadian rhythm, this rhythm of day and night, will be suppressed if you have too much light.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be getting your melatonin from the pineal gland, right? So you want the light to be non-existent. You certainly want a dark
room. For
those
of us that grew up falling asleep to either Johnny Carson or Tom Snyder, we can sleep through anything. Well, we can sleep through the test pattern.
Well, I understand that. And remember, this balance between what's happening with your brain while you're awake and what your body wants it to do as far as sleep is concerned, at some point, sleep becomes irresistible no matter what environment you're in.
Yes.
More or less. But if you want to have a healthy, regular sleep pattern, you want to try and do these things. You mentioned you mentioned nicotine or stimulants. Same goes for caffeine. These things will reduce your ability to fall asleep. There's no question about it. You can get tolerant to some of this, however. Okay, smokers or coffee drinkers. Oftentimes we'll say, well, I can drink a coffee or I, you know, have a cigarette or something like that before I go to bed. Doesn't seem to bother them. But you've become tolerant of those chemicals.
In my case, it's with tea. I can have, some people say, well, don't you have decaffeinated at night? No, I'm fine. And that doesn't bother me. Certain coffee, that would probably bother me.
Well, here's another thing is alcohol. Now, I have nothing against alcohol. But if you're talking about how it affects your sleep, yes, alcohol can make you drowsy, maybe put you to sleep. But it's a suppressant. It's a neural suppressant. And what happens with that when it wears off is there's a rebound, okay, to your excitation. So if you've ever been really wasted, and I know that you must have been in many times, Doug.
Oh, sure, right.
Okay. If you've ever been wasted.
I'm being facetious. Actually, no. But
if you've ever been wasted.
Nobody's surprised.
You're in bed and you're asleep. And the next thing you know, you're kind of like awake. And like you're there and like you can't get back to sleep right away. It's that rebound from the neurologic suppressant effect of the alcohol.
It suppressed all the good that sleep would have done.
Yeah, and then you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, assuming you went to bed at midnight or something like that, and you have this stimulant effect. Also, you're eating. You want to try not to eat a great deal, about an hour and a half, 2 hours before bedtime, and that's really important for other reasons too. Of patients who have so-called reflux, gastroesophageal reflux, you want to not do that. Exercising. Not at night, but exercising actually during the day or in the early part of the day tends to promote sleep at night. And I'm not sure why that is, but we do know observationally that that's something that happens.
You're spending some of that energy that you have for during the day, and by the evening, I guess you're out of it.
I suppose. And lastly, are you a napper? Do you like to take naps?
Occasionally.
Okay. Well,
usually on the weekends.
Yeah. Well, if you nap for like 20 minutes or so, that's not bad. That's kind of restorative.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But if you're in there for an hour and a half, you know, more than 90 minutes, it's going to really affect your sleep pattern at night. And so you just don't want to do that. You want to try and avoid those long naps.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the deal on sleep. If you have any questions about anything Dr. Zlupko said, you can email me, doug@leitnerradio.com. That link is also on the page that will have the podcast that's coming up a little bit later this afternoon. We have about 30 seconds. Anything else to add?
Nothing other than I wish everybody a good night's sleep tonight. And also remind you once again about the co-workers program, the Black Lung Program, which we have at the Lung Disease Center. You can be evaluated for black lung disease just by calling the number 814-800-2309. It's a free evaluation that includes chest x-ray, pulmonary function studies, blood gas analysis, oxygen analysis, and an EKG.
Easy for you to say. Dr. Zlupko is with us the third Tuesday of each month at 2 p.m., so that's going to be September 22nd. And the podcast up at WRTA.com. Take care.